I'm with Jeff Bartlett, and Jeff, maybe you can talk about your involvement. This is part of the Oral History Project for Rock Mullen, and maybe you can talk about your involvement. When did it begin, and how has it grown and developed over the years? Because you just said you're still working with them.
I am. Well, I believe he just said that if it's in a book, I don't need to remember it. So I'm not sure exactly when Ragamala first performed at the Southern Theater that I ran for a quarter of a century plus. But I think it was about 20 years ago, in the early 90s. And Ragamala came to me like all other artists did at the time who performed at Southern and continued to do, and outlined their idea for a piece, and I thought it sounded really good. But I thought a lot of people's work sounded really good at that time. But you know, even then, I have to say it seemed like there was something a little bit special about Ronnie, because at that time it was really Ronnie. Her daughters weren't really even of age yet. But just her vision, and I was always fascinated by artists who were working with historical traditions and yet trying to make them relevant as a performance form in the contemporary world. I found that always, I did and still do find that a really interesting razor's edge that people try to, you know, be on. And so I just liked the sound of what they were going to do, so I put them on stage, and then I saw them, and then I was like, oh my goodness, this is really, really amazing stuff. And so the facial expressions, the nuance of the gesture, the nuance of the face, the nuances, and the way in which they physicalize the music and the physicality and the music work together. It was really beautiful. So I worked with them for many years. Really, the Southern Theater was their primary home for performance in the Twin Cities, and I was lucky enough to design the lights for all the shows that they did there, except for that very first one, actually. And so I just watched them over the years continue to get better and better at their work, and then first Aparna and then Ashwini grew up and joined the company. And anyway, I can talk more, but I'll take a breath and let you ask me a question.
Yeah, so maybe you can, your background was with the Southern, and lighting, that's your background?
Interesting background. Depending on how we define background, and I don't know, you know, how much tape you have.
Well, we got about 14 hours.
I know it's not tape. I know it's not really tape, but the sort of quick version, relatively quick version of the story is that I started out as a musician. Actually, I majored in music in college. I was a bassoon player, but I didn't really want to be a bassoonist. I really wanted to be a conductor. So I studied some conducting in college and such, and bottom line was that my time as a music student in college made me realize I really wasn't cut out to be a professional musician. So even a conductor. But as a conductor, and this because this will come back later, what interested me, what has always interested me the most about music is the big picture of it, the arc and the sweep and the contours and the rising and the falling and that kind of thing. And so that's what I got to sort of imagine and play with as a conductor, kind of. So realized that wasn't the career path for me. Tried a little of this, a little of that. I tried, but because I'd also always had a real interest in the visual. And I like mentally would take pictures of things, and so I tried photography for a while and tried filmmaking for a while, and then I sort of stumbled into working in theater in New York City, which is where I'm from. I'm from the East Coast. But I had come out to the University of Minnesota for a semester to study with my bassoon teacher. So I fell in love with the Twin Cities, but then I moved back to the East Coast, and that's where I started working in theater. But I didn't like the East Coast, so I decided to move back to Minnesota, to Minneapolis, without really having an idea of what I would do. But by this time I had gotten enough interested in theater that I thought, well, I could at least, you know, get a job, maybe. I came back to town. I approached the Guthrie Theater to see if I could do an internship in stage carpentry at the Guthrie. It didn't work out for whatever reason, but at the time, the Guthrie was opening up this space on the West Bank called the Guthrie 2, which was in the Southern Theater building, which became the Southern Theater. I mean, it was originally the Southern Theater back in the 1900s. And so I got an internship working in the building that was going to become the Southern Theater. And that's when my career, in a way, sort of started. And it was all wrapped up. There were three components of it that were all wrapped up together. Lighting design, especially lighting design for dance, the Southern Theater building itself, and the Twin Cities Performing Arts Community. So just to pick up that thread I dropped before about the conducting part, it was at the Guthrie 2/Southern that I discovered dance lighting. It was the first time I really did dance lighting. And then when that happened, it completely clicked into gear for me, because I was like, oh, this is it. This is the visual plus the musical, and it's the theatrical, and it's all in the mix, and this is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, sort of, kind of. But at the same time, I was also going, and the Southern Theater is sort of what I'm going to do with the rest of my life also. And so, and this is, you know, we're talking a scarily long time ago, 1975, 76. So that began this long arc during which I developed, if you will, relationships, I guess you could say, with all of these things, lighting design, and I just kept doing more and more and more and more of it. I'm self-taught as a lighting designer, working with the Twin Cities dance community and building the Southern Theater as a venue / entity whose purpose in life was to make it possible for local artists to grow and develop. So there were a lot of threads that all sort of merged in that little room, and that, you know, kept me going, and that I kept going for a lot of years.
And so then through the evolution, you know, basically you're self-taught, that you became more and more, you were involved in all these artistic projects along the way as well?
I was, to a greater or lesser extent, but at the very least I would be involved in the tech process the final few days before opening, and sitting next to the choreographer, director, whatever, at the tech table, making, you know, taking the piece apart moment by moment and lighting it, and, you know, forming collegial, collaborative working relationships with these people. It's a lot like a lot of dates, in a way, because everybody has their own way of interacting and their own degree of how much control they want to have or how little control they want to have. And so every week or two we were doing a new show. And over the years, I started working, of course, with the same artists multiple times over the course of the year, but there were always new people in the course of the years. But so there was at least that sort of base level collaborative relationship as the lighting designer. But then, depending on my personal relationship with any given artist, as the years progressed, I would begin to see if there was a comfort level there with having a little bit more of a collaborative role in the work, not just as the lighting designer, but a more verging more into what you might call dramaturgy or you know, sort of critiquing it with an outside eye kind of thing. And sometimes I would do that more, and sometimes I wouldn't do it at all. It would totally depend on what the level of receptivity was in any given artist. And in recent years, I've started to do that even more, and in places where I'm more welcome, and it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I suppose this continual, you know, like, because I know I've been to a number of the shows, and I saw a number of groups perform on the Southern stage, and there'd be this evolution,
right?
Basically, so as these groups were evolving, it sounds like you were evolving.
Right.
As well, in your relationships with them as well.
Both are true, yeah. And also, in addition to that, just to sort of, I don't know, I'll stop trying to figure out what it's sort of like, but anyway, part of what was important to me as I decided which groups to bring back to the Southern over a period of years and which ones to sort of let drift away was their evolution. It was the idea of growth, artistic growth, and I wasn't too dogmatic about defining it in any particular way, but it was some sort of notion that there was something that they were trying to find or explore and that they were making some sort of headway towards exploring that, or maybe the headway would just be to better define what it is that we're trying to find, or something, whatever. That idea of growth was critical to me, and it was when I would see a group not really doing that, that I would sort of say, you know, this isn't really for you. So, yeah, you're right. It was all, and yes, I was developing, I was growing as a lighting artist, I was growing as a presenter, I was growing as an arts administrator, not always as greatly as I would have liked, but you know, I was doing more. And I was growing as a curator. So yeah, it's all woven together very much.
Yeah. So then, you know, maybe you can address, you know, since you have evolved with Ragmala over a number of years, how have you seen them evolve? And you know, do you remember any of those early productions and where there's something that struck you that you're just kind of going, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yeah. Well, yes to all of the above. I do remember those early productions. There was always things that struck me. I guess thinking back to best I can to put out of my mind things that I've learned in the interim, but just going back to looking at them early on, what I was struck with was the overall sort of energy, vibrancy, vitality. I almost want to say buoyancy. One of the things that I saw early on was Aparna jumping. And when she jumps, she just looks like she's like, they're an anti-gravity machine. She just flies off the stage. She looks like she's bouncing off a trampoline, you know, just boink up in the air. I'm like, wow, how does that happen? Another thing that I was struck with early on was Ronnie's face and what she could do without hardly even moving her body. But just the stories that she could tell just with the lift of an eyebrow or the blink of the heightening of a cheek or a facial expression, she just could convey this incredible amount of emotion and depth of feeling and just through her face. And that was, you know, one of the things that hooked me early on. But the thing that, you know, I don't know who's going to hear this or if anybody's going to hear this, these particular words, but I, especially when I was at the Southern, I would always hesitate to, you know, do anything that sounded like comparing one company to another. But what in my mind sets Ragamala apart, it set them apart early on, and as the years have progressed, it sets them apart more and more and more, is the rigor of their discipline and the way in which they are relentless in their pursuit of continuing to get better and better and better. They don't rest. Ronnie doesn't rest as an artist. If I thought Ronnie's face was expressive 20 years ago, what she can do with it now, it's just, she's just a master. And watching Aparna grow as a dancer from somebody who was amazing to somebody who's like literally otherworldly, I mean, transportative kind of out there as an artist, But and one of the things that's been so great to be on the inside, so to speak, or in rehearsal with them, is to watch the way in which Ronnie and Aparna will not let their dancers rest. I mean, they're always making, in the theater world, they're called notes. Ragamala has a word, they call them points. We make points. And, the finger, when it needs to be here, not here. The arm, when you're doing that arm, and they'll say things like, which I could quote exactly, but they will not just talk about the physical way in which the body needs to be. They will talk about the ideas that are infusing that physical body. You have to really feel that you miss him and he's gone and you really are living the how hard it is for you to be apart from him. Let's say that those kinds of things, in addition to the arm has to be higher, like that. And they're just relentless is the only word I can come up with, but I don't mean that in a bad way. They do it in a
more like persistent.
I
think persistent has more of a positive connotation than relentless.
I think it does.
Yeah.
Persistent is true, but what I'm trying to say is that it never lets up. They don't ever. I mean, of course, at a certain point, it's 5 o'clock and the show's going to happen at 8, so we're done rehearsing now. But I'll be sitting and talking to Aparna about a lighting cue, and the dancers will be up there working on stage. And Aparna's got one eye on the dancers, and at all times, and she'll stop listening to you for a minute and just say, "Wait. I hear you, but Tamara, that has to be like this or this like that." And it's not, I mean, I've seen other dance companies work, and there can be a kind of a neurosis about it, or a heaviness, or a power trip, or an ego trip. It's not there at all. None of that's there. And the company, the way they take the notes, the points, they are just open receptors. They stand, they listen, and they try to implement the best they can. So it's this amazing symbiotic relationship between Ronnie and Aparna as teachers and their dancers as disciples, if you will, that just has resulted in continual artistic growth, uninterrupted artistic growth, year after year after year after year. And they just keep growing. And I know there's dancers who have been, for whom it has worked less well. I don't want to make it like it's all one big idealized bunch of wonderful stuff. I'm sure there's hard things that go on behind the scenes I don't know about. But from my perspective, this is what I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm really curious, Jeff, they're talking about how, Ragamala has grown. And how has this pushed you in this process, since you are continually there throughout the years working on the lights and some of the tech things? So how has this pushed you?
A really good question. And I, there's there's definitely ways in which it has. The best one way to track this, if you will, would be to talk about the issue of face light on faces. Generally speaking, in dance, lighting dance, we light mostly with side light. And we do that because it brings out the three-dimensional form of the body. And that's mostly what we care about in dance. But side light, one of the downfalls of side light is it doesn't light the face very well. So, I don't know. Anyway, sorry. Glad this isn't live radio. So early on when I started lighting Ragamala, there was this tension between me and Ronnie, where Ronnie was always wanting more face light. And I was resistant because the typical way of thinking about face light in lighting dance is that it makes things flat. It flattens things out. And so I would say, well, yeah, there's more face light, but it makes things flat. And we would stumble along and find some sort of compromise. This went on for a while, like a number of years. And somewhere along the way, I'm a little ashamed to admit this, but somewhere along the way, I got it for the first time. I actually got what the problem was, that the way in which there's so much that happens with these dancers, they're not just working with their bodies, they're working with their face, and they're working a lot with their eyes and the little musculature around the eyes, the eyebrows, the pupils, where they are looking, whether their eyes are looking happy or sad. And so it took me a while, as I say, a number of years, to understand, oh, we need to be able to see their eyes in a way that most dancers, it doesn't really matter. And I don't mean any disrespect by that, but usually low angle front light is the last thing you want to put in a dance lighting, because it just makes things flat. But for Ragamala, you need that to be able to see the nuance of what's going on underneath the eyebrow and that socket, eye socket. So it took me a long time to get that. So, but then I did get it. And so then how did it make me grow? So then the challenge becomes, so how do you provide the amount of face light that they need without it getting flat? And how do you find the balance where there's still, you know, glisteniness and energy coming in from the side light, and you're still seeing the body in the way you need to, and also seeing the face in the way that is needed. So that's been a tremendous area of exploration and growth for me. Another issue is their skin color, which I'm now actually actively trying to research to see where there is science about, what's the science around skin tones. And I've just now started to investigate it a little bit. But one of the really challenging things about their wonderful skin color is that there are certain color tones that really don't work very well. When I first started to light them, I used to use a lot of yellows and golds, and it took me a while to realize that doesn't always work so well with their skin, because there can be a lot of green in yellow light, and there's a certain amount of green in their skin, and if you don't do it just right, it's gonna make them look kind of sick. So, you know, again, it's how to find the color balance that works and has a vibrancy and a vitality to it, a richness, a dimensionality, preserving the skin tone. It's extremely, I don't know if I'm conveying this at all, but this is like a big thing for me in my lighting design mind right now. I'm spending a lot of time trying to figure this out in relation to Ragamala. So here I am, you know, after letting them 20 years, I'm sitting here saying, I'm really working hard to try to figure this out. So there's that part of it. Not to do too much of a run-on answer, but the other piece of working with Ragamala, where for me working with Ragamala is unique in the sense of personal growth, isn't directly related to lighting, but it does relate, which is the spirituality of their work. As I'm a sort of budding student of yoga and Buddhist meditation and things like that, and not by any means a scholar, but I consider myself someone who's trying to make some sort of little bit of progress on some kind of spiritual path during my time on this earth. And their work is unabashedly about spiritual things. I mean, they talk about it in their PR materials, and not to mention that it exudes from the stage. And so this whole idea of, you know, how to realize the spiritual through art has been a sort of theme for me in general, but, you know, to do this more specifically with them, and how can my work as a lighting designer help that? Because really, light, I mean, you know, not to get all woo-woo, but there are spiritual teachers who say, well, you know, we're all made of light. So it's like, it's sort of a heavy responsibility in a way. It's like, the work is about spirituality and you're the guy with the light. So boy, you better do a good job.
But it sounds like, you know, because this process over the years of, you know, awarenesses and challenges, I think is just the sheer fact of you keep working together, and it keeps pushing you into different areas.
Right.
And even some people, you know, you bring up the idea of spirituality, and they just go, huh?
Right. Yeah.
But you're talking about in terms of how do you light that?
Right. Exactly. Or how do you bring it out? How do you allow it to shine forth? No pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like, I mean, I'm not saying that there would be anybody who would do this, but it's not like, oh, I figured out how to light Ragamala after my first 5 years of working with them, and now I've got the Ragamala lighting that I just do. Nuh-uh. It keeps, like, I'm constantly, you know, can I do this better? Is there, what have I not learned about how pink gels respond with their skin, and what, you know, so I'm constantly experimenting, and this has, in a way, becoming unburdened from the day-to-day challenge of having to make the Southern Theater work as a nonprofit organization, which ultimately I wasn't really able to do. There's a lot bigger story there. It's not quite that simple. But yeah, I mean, we never did find a financial model that worked. No question. But being freed up from that, and now the work that I've done with Ragamala in the years since, it's really enabled me to focus more energy, more time and energy on this, the artistic aspects of lighting, especially now, after getting the full-time job at Carleton, where I really only got 3 or 4 lighting design clients, and Ragamala is by far the most active of those. So I'm really able to focus since I first lit them at the Kohl's Center, which I guess would have been about 2 years ago, the degree to which I'm thinking about this is exponentially greater than it has been in the past. So I'm not, I'm definitely continuing to grow as an artist from working with them.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy to be doing so.
Yeah, it sounds like an amazing challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, just the thought process of skin color and everything and what light does to them.
Yeah.
Well, maybe since, you know, you've had this whole, you know, this big long process with them, how have you seen their audiences grow and change over the years?
That's a little harder to answer, actually. You'd think, you know, that as the Southern Theater guy, I would know, I would be able to quantify that, but it's not so easy. I've seen their audiences at the Twin Cities, their local audiences, ebb and flow, and I haven't really been able to track why it is that it ebbs sometimes and flows other times. I've seen mostly from afar their audiences outside of the Twin Cities mostly grow and grow and grow, and they're developing, as you know, a more national profile and getting more national recognition. But my actual knowledge, if you will, of what goes on with the audience is pretty limited and pretty anecdotal. And, you know, I had a good friend, actually one of my yoga teachers, who said, I said, you know, this was way years ago, I said, you know, I'm doing that Ragamala show tonight, you should come see it. She's like, well, you know, I've seen them. And one other thing about Ragamala is that their dances all look the same. So why should I go see them again? So that's okay. So I'm thinking, you know, well, if that's what one person thinks, there's probably other people who think that. I know I also am well aware that there's been a constant desire on the part of, or a consistent desire on the part of certain audience members to know more about what the gestures mean. This has been a theme, and it's something that Ronnie and Aparna and I have discussed at length, is this question of how much should they be told, and why is it that people care so much? Why is it that this comes up? As you know, as opposed to Ronnie will say, well, people don't ask Martha Graham what that gesture meant. You know, why do they have to know what this gesture means? And my response to that is, well, because it's obvious that your gesture means something very literal. It's like a butterfly. You do a butterfly, and then you do a snake, and then you do some water. You're saying nouns. So we want to know how these nouns connect to each other. So, and I, you know, there's no quick and easy answer to this, but I'm aware that even in the most recent performance of theirs that I did here in the cities, a good friend who watches a lot of dance said, you know, what they really need is subtitles, you know. And so I, you know, this isn't really about how the audience is growing. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit about audience reaction. On the flip side of that, we did this show in some little, basically some kind of community college way out in the boondocks of, I don't even know what, Pennsylvania, maybe it was. And not exactly what I consider a cultural mecca or a spiritual mecca. And, you know, as we will do, we had a student crew. And there was this young lady whose job it was to stand backstage and be the stage manager. She didn't have a lot to do, but she was there. She was backstage and she was watching, and I, you know, didn't really give it a lot of thought. I was busy doing my thing, lighting the piece and everything. And at the end, and so we did a rehearsal. I can't remember if we rehearsed there one day or 2 days, but we did a couple of rehearsals and then we did the performance. And afterwards, I just said something like, thank you very much. And she just started talking to me. She said, I just love this company. It's so amazing. The work is so amazing. I couldn't take my eyes off them. And then I realized she'd been standing there utterly absorbing every single iota of movement that had been done the whole time we'd been there for a day or two. And so I always think of her as being like, so again, if there's one person like that, who knows how many other thousands there are, where they know nothing coming in. They don't care what the gestures mean. They just glom onto it, and the work speaks to them, and they resonate with it. So, but I don't know. I did the show in New Jersey somewhere with them in a 2,000 seat house filled with Indian people, and they just leapt to their feet at the end of it. So I know they have a great deal of acceptance within the Indian community. That's about all I know on that.
So you haven't seen say even during the time of the Southern, that it was, because I know the dance community was extremely interested in Ronnie in the beginning, and then along with that comes some Indians and some Westerners.
Right.
Have you seen it grown either way?
I can't really identify a trend, very honestly, but I know that that's always been a thing. And there was a while there where Ronnie was, especially before Aparna became more of a co-artistic director, Ronnie was really going out there with jazz and some other musical forms other than traditional, straight ahead traditional, and music, and I heard, actually, people in the company told me that turned off some of their Indian audience. Some of the Indian people liked the more traditional approach. So I know that's happened, but I don't really have an apples to apples comparison for mm-hmm. how that's really trended over the years.
Sure. So
I do think there are some elements in the dance community who, well, I don't know, who are maybe envious of their success, or maybe think that their success is because they're not white.
Never occurred to me.
Reverse. And what is it? Reverse racism, or whatever it is. Reverse discrimination.
Yeah.
But I'm not, I shouldn't say it's kind of gossip, so I shouldn't say it.
Yeah. So in this whole process then, maybe you can maybe talk a little bit about some of the Ragmala's successes, as a dance company.
Yeah. Well, I actually liked some of the work that they did with some of the non-traditional forms. The Billie Holiday show, they did an evening of work to Billie Holiday's music, and I find it really interesting to look at the way in which the Bharatanatyam movement can work with other musical forms. In a way, they're sort of drifting back that way a little with this new work that's going to be at the Walker in May of 2014, but in the sense that they're working with a jazz saxophone player and jazz-based guitarist, but the musical basis of what they're doing is raga-based. So it's jazz, but firmly anchored in raga world. One of the most powerful pieces that they did was this one called Bhakti, where they used Ruth McKenzie singing the music of Hildegard von Bingen. And so they intermingled ancient, I don't know, I just ignorantly used the word Indian because I don't know if it was Hindu or what it was exactly, poetry, but anyway, it was medieval, from the medieval period. And then you had Ruth McKenzie singing work from the Western European medieval tradition. And the whole theme of both of the poetry from both traditions was about the beauty of the earth and, you know, the exploring and discovering the spiritual through nature and beauty of nature, and just the way those themes interwove and the music interwove, not to mention Ruth McKenzie is, you know, killer, amazing person to listen to. I just thought that was a really, really strong piece. And I really, really loved Sacred Earth as well, the one with the projections of the Warli art, that's traditional art out of India that just depicts kind of, you know, a natural lifestyle, earth-based lifestyle, and the way that the piece interacts with the visuals that are projected. It's really amazing for me. Those are just a few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ragmala's impact on Minnesota. How do you see their impact?
Hard to know. It's hard to know what the impact has been, in the sense that I don't have a way of measuring how much their message has been received or to what extent their message has influenced people. Sorry. So I don't mean to. It really annoys me when people do what I just did, which is start off with a negative. But what I think of Ragamala as this constantly, it's almost like, what's that? Eternal, like an eternal flame kind of thing, where they've just been this lantern that's just been burning in here in Minneapolis for two decades. It's shining forth this light, and what the light, the message for me that comes, that is exudes from this light, is a message about perseverance, a message about, you know, like knowing what you want to achieve and not letting anything get in your way and continuing to persevere after that goal. It's a message about the beauty of art in the world and the place that art has in our world, and art as an expression of spirituality, and that you don't need to be you don't need to hide that relationship. In fact, you can celebrate it and people will respond in a good way. I said perseverance already. I was going to say stick-to-itiveness, but just again that measured one foot in front of another, lifelong journey to continue to put out this influence through artistic creativity and artistic expressiveness, that, you know, that there is beauty in this world. There's spirituality in this world. Beauty and spirituality can go together, and we can experience all that in a theater. And as I say, it's just this plodding consistency of that message over a period of years, and in a way that never once lets you believe that they think that they can rest, or that they can rest on their laurels, or that they've reached a level of achievement that now they can coast. It's again that perseverance, to continually find more, do more. So has that had an impact on the state of Minnesota? Well, I'm not sure, but obviously McKnight Foundation thought they did. It did. by giving Ronnie one of the few, you know, distinguished artist awards that they've given out. So it must be out there somewhere.
Yeah. Well, it sounds in a way like it's had an impact on you.
Oh, totally.
You know.
Yeah, that's true. And I live in Minnesota.
That's right.
You know. I'm a Minnesotan, and I vote. I'm a Minnesotan, and I like Ragamala.
Yeah. But even your whole process of, you know, you're not through.
Right.
No. You're not through learning.
Right.
You know, they're not through learning. It sounds like this continual, you know, evolution between the both of you.
Right. Right. Yeah. Very true.
Yeah. So is there anything you would like to add, you know, that we haven't touched upon?
I really don't think so. I think I've really covered. In fact, you've helped me unearth things that have been kicking around in my brain, but I don't usually talk about. So it's been great.
Well, that's good. Good. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot, Jeff.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah.